This week's Sedra Kisavo, the Torah speaks about the second time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris. He made a covenant with us on the observance of the Torah. First time was at Sinai. And now in Arvas Moav, as we're ready to cross the Jordan and go into Eretz Yisrael, the Rabban Hashem renewed that bris. And part of that bris, or the continuation of that new covenant, was the brachos and klalos, the curses and the blessings which were to be given as soon as they crossed the Jordan on Har Grizim and Har Eval, where half the people got up on one mountain, half the other mountain. The Kohanim and Leviim stood in the middle, and they gave 11, according to Rashi, blessings, and then 11 curses. You have to understand what it's all about. So one way of looking at it, which is found in the Yerushalmi in Sota, and in the Argamar in Sanhedrin, that the Jewish people were not responsible one for the other until they went into Eretz Yisrael. The reason for that is that it's Eretz Yisrael that unites us. We're not fully united unless we're in Eretz Yisrael, and we say that every Shabbos at Mincha. Ato Echad, V'Shimcha Echad, you God are one, and your name is one. Umika amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Who is like the Jewish people? One nation in Eretz Yisrael. The Maral says, in Eretz Yisrael, we are united physically. We're all in one place. But also, Eretz Yisrael is a spiritual land. It brings out the spiritual nature of the Jewish people. And physically, we are disunited. Physically, we're all separate bodies. It's only our neshamas that unite into one united neshama of Klal Yisrael. So in Eretz Yisrael, where we are more spiritual and we're physically all in one place, that's when we can be one. So therefore, the din of arevus, of responsibility, one Jew for another, but the word Kol Yisrael arevim zebazeh literally means all Jews are responsible one for the other. But the word la'arev also means to be mixed in. All Jews are interrelated. All Jews are mixed in with each other. So the responsibility one for the other stems from the fact that we're really all one. Our neshamas are really all one, and therefore what you do affects me, and what I do affects you, and I'm responsible for you, you're responsible for me. Now that arevus is manifested in a lot of positive ways. For instance, if I made Kiddush Friday night, and then I decide, you know, I really like making Kiddush, so I'd like to do it again. If I do it again, I am guilty of making a bracha she'eino tzricha, bracha levatola. I made a bracha that's not necessary. But if you come to my house and you haven't made Kiddush yet, and you don't know how to make Kiddush, so you ask me to say Kiddush again for you, I'm allowed to do that. I was Yotze Kiddush already, because since we are interrelated, the fact that you haven't yet fulfilled your mitzvah, there's a part of me that hasn't fulfilled my mitzvah. So for you, I can fulfill it again, because I haven't fulfilled my mitzvah in regards to you. Therefore, just like every Jew is responsible for each other when it comes to mitzvahs, it works the same way with aveiros. And if you do something wrong, it affects me, and if I do something wrong, it affects you. And therefore, I have a responsibility to see that you don't do things wrong, and you have a responsibility to see that I don't do things wrong. Now it says that therefore, that in Arvos Moav, in the plains of Moab, just as they were ready to cross into Eretz Yisrael, the last thing that Moshe Rabbeinu did was to make this covenant, which introduced this idea of arevus, of responsibility. However, it says, that they were not, they didn't actually, didn't take effect until they crossed the Yarden and they came into Eretz Yisrael, like we explained, because Eretz Yisrael is what gives this unity. Now there is a difference of opinion in the Gemara, what exactly we're responsible for. Some say we're only responsible for things that are public, that are known, but not for hidden things, secret things. I don't know what you do in your house, privately, secretly. How could I be responsible for that? But there is an opinion that once they crossed the Jordan, they were responsible not only for the niglos, the known, public, open things, but every Jew is responsible also for the secret things, hidden things that other Jews did. Everybody was responsible. And part of the proof to that was that as soon as we came into Eretz Yisrael, Achan sinned. He took from the booty of Yericho, which was prohibited. Nobody knew about it. He did it quietly, secretly. Yet the whole people were held responsible for what he did. So to a certain degree you see that the arevus, the responsibility of one Jew to another, extends even to things that people do secretly and privately. If that's the case, okay, then we can understand why when they first came into Eretz Yisrael, they gave these blessings and curses. What was the purpose of it? These 11 things that are mentioned are all things that people can do secretly and nobody knows about it. Or, that's what the Rashbam says, or as the Svarno says, they are things that are normally done by leaders, powerful people, that people don't have the power to protest or to stop. So in either case, either they're done secretly and I don't have the power to stop you from doing it because I don't know you're doing it, or because it's done by people who I don't have the power to protest even, right? Because if I protest, they'll punish me or whatever, or worse. And also, I don't have the power of stopping it because these are powerful people. So therefore, there's the concept of even if I can't do anything to stop the sin, at least there's an idea of protesting. Because if I don't protest, then I'm not fulfilling my responsibility towards the common, unified responsibility of the Jewish people. And therefore, what happened over here was we came into Eretz Yisrael and we made a public, one-time, universal, eternal machor, protest. Anyone who will ever do these sins privately, where we won't be able to fulfill our responsibility of arevus, of mutual responsibility, because we don't know. Or it'll be done by people that we won't be able to speak up because they're too powerful. We're making a protest now. Let me just turn this on. Yeah. We're making a protest now for all time. And the Jewish people are one, they never change. It's like a corporation, right? Just the faces change, the names change, but it's all the same corporation. Klal Yisrael is the same Klal Yisrael for all generations, right? And therefore, what that generation protested applies to all future generations. And not only that, every time we read the Torah and we learn the Torah, we once again renew that protest, at least in spiritually and theoretically. So that is the idea of these curses and blessings. It is a one-time, eternal, universal, public protest to these kinds of sins that are very difficult to protest when they're being done because you don't know about it. Now, why is there an idea of protesting? Why, if you see somebody sinning, right, if you can be mochiach them, you can give them tochacha, right, and rebuke them, I understand that. Maybe they won't do the sin again. Or they'll do tshuva for the sin that they did. But if you can't rebuke people, what is the benefit of protesting? So there are a few different benefits. The first one is that the protest may stop the sin. It may be that if you protest, right, the people will not do the sin again. Or they'll stop, desist from doing the sin the first time if you protest before they did the sin. So protesting, a machah, is in some ways a function of tochacha. It's part of the mitzvah of rebuke. Part of the way of rebuking is protesting. Sometimes you can rebuke in this way, sometimes you can rebuke by protesting. And therefore we find that if, in fact, if you had protested, you would have stopped the sin from happening, and you didn't protest, then you're considered an accomplice to the sin. And the person who could have protested and didn't is nitvas ba'oso avon. He's included in the punishment of the sin of the person who did the sin, because by protesting you could have stopped it. But that's only one aspect. There's a second aspect. What if you couldn't stop it? Couldn't stop the sin. It's not going to help, right? Somebody's driving through your neighborhood on Shabbos, and you're not going to be able to stop him from driving on Shabbos, okay? But there's a second benefit, and that is for your sake. You shouldn't become insensitive to the sin. It shouldn't have an influence over you seeing somebody's sin and not doing anything about it, where you will become insensitive to that sin. So by making a machah, you show your sensitivity. I'm not at peace with Chilul Shabbos, right? I can't just let it go by, right, and be indifferent. So I protest. Now, the difference between the two is, do you have to do it vocally or not? If the idea is to stop the other person from doing the sin, right, and I know that my protest will perhaps have an effect, and the other person may rethink and may stop, then you have to do it out loud. Otherwise, the other person is not going to stop doing the sin. But if the idea is, I'm not going to stop him, I'm not going to help him, it's helping me not to be indifferent, not to become insensitive to the sin, then I don't have to scream to him, I can scream to myself. So if the purpose of the protest is not to become insensitive and indifferent to the sin that's being committed, you don't have to yell Shabbos. You can yell Shabbos quietly to yourself, that you shouldn't become affected. But there's no purpose to yell it at the other person. It's not going to stop him altogether. He doesn't know what Shabbos is. He has no idea what he's doing, right? Or he's doing it lahaches, so it's not going to stop him anyway. He's just going to make it and do it more because he's happy to hear you yell Shabbos. That's what he came to do, to make you upset. So if it's not going to help for him, you can't remain quiet. You have to protest. But you don't have to let him hear it. You have to hear it. That's the second reason. A third reason. Third reason is, sometimes the protest is not for the person who's doing the sin, and not even for you. But if you let the sin go by without any reaction, then other people are going to see the person doing the sin, and they're going to say, probably not so bad because nobody protested. Maybe it's okay to do that because nobody said anything. So for the sake of making an impression on other people, there's an idea of saying this is wrong. So even though that person's doing it and nothing's going to stop him, but at least I've made the sin serious in the eyes of other people who may have followed suit because everybody's influenced by what they see and what's around them or whatever, and instead of being influenced by his sin, be influenced by my protest. That's a third reason. A fourth reason why the protest is important is that sin affects us all. The results of the sin, it's like pollution. Today we can understand that. You know, people used to say, that, you know, live and let live. What you do in the privacy of your home doesn't affect me, you're not stepping on my feet, consenting adults, right? Do what you want, and doesn't affect me, so why should I get involved, right? Let everybody do what they want as long as they don't affect other people. Today it's very difficult to be able to defend that kind of shita because of the following. This is obviously an absurd, exaggerated example, but the point is brought across. Today, right, there's a significant amount of people who believe that releasing fluorocarbons into the atmosphere, right, has a devastating effect on the, what's it called, the ozone layer of the atmosphere, and it lets in what's it called, radioactive cosmic rays, and could cause who knows what kind of diseases, right, that radiation can cause. Therefore, to a certain degree, they have outlawed fluorocarbons. You can't have fluorocarbons propelling your deodorant, right? You need something that's ozone safe. Now imagine if it was much more clear that every time you spritzed your deodorant with fluorocarbons, it opened up a little window in the ozone layer, and cosmic radiation showered down on one area in the world, and the people who that showered on immediately got cancer. Okay? Let's say that would be the immediate result. Wouldn't be something that's over years and maybe or whatever. It was clear. Okay? Could somebody say, look, I'm going into my bedroom and I want to spritz my deodorant on my underarm. And it's my private business and nobody's going to tell me what to do. If, in fact, by doing that, you release these fluorocarbons, they go up into the atmosphere, float over China, open up a window over there, and immediately, right, 10,000 people in China are stricken with cancer, that argument does not hold water. What do you mean? You're doing something in the privacy of your bedroom that doesn't affect anybody. You are causing 10,000 people somewhere on the other end of the world to get cancer. So it's not your own private business. This, or pollution, right? What do you want from me? I'm dumping my garbage into a stream. It's my part of the stream. I own the garbage. I own the plant. I own that part of the stream. No, because it goes into the stream. It goes downstream, right? And it pollutes how much water supply of how many people who are then going to get dysentery because you threw your garbage into the stream. There's nothing that happens that doesn't affect everybody. Pollution, right, all different kinds of things that people do in the privacy of their home, but it can affect the whole world. Sins are the same way. They're spiritual pollution. No one can say, I'm doing something privately in the privacy of my home. It's not your business. It is my business. Because whatever you do in the privacy of your home, right, affects the whole world. And I'm part of the world. It affects me too. So I have a, not only a responsibility, but I have a right to try to stop that pollution, spiritual pollution. So that's another idea. Another idea is, it may not stop the sin, but just the protest itself strengthens Torah and mitzvahs, because people see that it's important enough to protest. So it gives other people a greater honor, a greater respect, and it strengthens the fulfillment of Torah and mitzvahs by other people, and that counteracts the negative effect, right? It's as if there would be positive pollution, the opposite of pollution, right? Purifying the air. So somebody pollutes the air, and I put into the atmosphere these purifying, agents. So it counteracts and sometimes, dissolves the pollution. So true, I may not be able to stop the pollution, but if I protest and I show my respect for Torah and I strengthen the Torah by other people, then that helps to outweigh or to dissolve or to balance out the negative pollution. That's another idea of macha. By making a protest, you increase the honor for Torah, if it's done properly, and the respect for Torah. And a last reason, the Shari Tshuva says, that by protesting these sins, even though they're done secretly, but then people are aware of the fact that they're important, and the people who have the ability, like the judges, the police, you know, in a Torah society, they'd be police too, the Shotrim. They will then go and look and see if people are doing these sins. Because nobody protests these hidden sins, Right? Even though I don't know if anybody's doing them, but if everybody is indifferent to them, nobody's going to take the time out and the effort to try to see if people are doing them or not, and to uncover them and stop them. But if there's a feeling that people are concerned, we don't want these kinds of sins done, we're sensitive to them, then the people in charge will feel a necessity to go and investigate and see if they can uncover if these sins are being done, and if the pollution is happening and it's affecting the Jewish people, because everybody's punished, even for people who do things secretly. So those are six reasons why protest is important. Hold the questions till the end. Okay. According to all these reasons, that's why when we came into Eretz Yisrael and we are going to now be responsible one for the other, and according to some, responsible even for hidden and secret things. So it was important for once and for all time, that the Jewish people as a people, not individuals, but the people as a people, made this public, universal, eternal protest specifically at those things that are done in secret. And that's why in describing this back in Seder Re'eh, Torah tells us what's going to be when we get to Eretz Yisrael to give these brachas and klalas. It refers to it in the following way. Re'eh in the singular. You in singular look. Anochi nosein lifneichem. I'm giving before you, plural, bracha klala, a curse and a blessing, or a blessing and a curse, hayom, today. Based on what we said, the idea is the following. You Jewish people who are one unity, even though you're separate individuals, but because you're one unity, you're all responsible one for the other, and what one person does affects the other. So therefore, it's a call, I'm giving you today, today meaning in that day that you're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, when that unity will become effective, you're going to have to make that public protest of the klala, the curse, and the blessing. And it could be for that reason, the main thing that's written in the Torah is the curse. The main thing here is the protest. But once we're making the protest against the people who are doing negative, we also want to strengthen the people who will come to an Asayin, who come to a situation where they may be tempted to do these things secretly, and they will overpower it and overcome it, and we want to give them a blessing. So the both the protest of the klala, the word klala is a curse, but it comes from the word kal. A klala works the opposite of a bracha. A bracha, it says a bracha has to have something to take effect on. You can't have a bracha on nothing. Why? Because bracha means to increase. So if you multiply zero, it's always zero. You have to have something that if you multiply it, increases. Right, by Elisha, when he wanted to give a bracha to the oil, he had to have oil to start with. He didn't create oil from nothing. He told her, bring me oil, I'll give it a bracha, and it'll increase. But if you bring me an empty pitcher, right, I'll give it a bracha, it'll increase more air. There won't be anything there. So a klal is the opposite. Klal is from Russian kal, light. It decreases, it lightens the thing that is negative. Right, you have all this pollution, the klala diminishes it, it makes it lighter. So therefore the macha, the protest, the klala, right, is there to diminish the effect of the sin, and it shouldn't harm the Jewish people because we're all interrelated. At the same time, we want to strengthen those people who don't sin, especially the ones who come into a situation where they're tempted to sin and they resist it. We want to strengthen them because that will also dissipate and diminish the effect of the people who do sin. The people who are strong and don't sin in these things add a positive force to the Jewish people that counteracts the negative force of the people who do sin. And that's why the final curse is Or Ashelo Yokim Es Divrei HaTorah Hazos Lasos Osam. Curses the person who will not Yokim As Divrei HaTorah Hazos. So what does that mean? It's not a curse for people who don't keep the mitzvahs, because that I could protest things that I know. It's specifically about people who don't commit themselves to keep all the mitzvahs. In other words, I keep mitzvahs and I look for them, but there are mitzvahs that I don't accept in my heart. I don't accept them. It's not the same thing as somebody who accepts all the mitzvahs and doesn't fulfill them all, because he has a yetzer hara and he's weak and he just can't do it, or he has a desire, an appetite, or whatever. I know it's wrong to eat treif, and I know that I'm going to be punished, but I can't control myself. I just love that treif sandwich. That's different than a person saying, I accept 612 mitzvahs, but not treif. I don't believe in that. A person can keep 612 mitzvahs perfectly, but not accept one, and he's not part of the Jewish people anymore. He's separated himself, because he doesn't have a Torah of 613 mitzvahs, he only has a mitzvah, Torah of 612. It's not the same thing. And a person who accepts in principle all 613, but he only keeps 500, that person is still within the Jewish people. He knows that he's responsible, except he's weak. It's a different story completely. So the curse is on the person, asher lo yakim es divrei haTorah zos. He doesn't accept, the Ramban says that, the Shari Tshuva says. The opposite, the bracha is to the person who accepts even what he doesn't know. In principle, I accept whatever I learn as the Torah. I don't know what the Torah is. I only know 10 mitzvahs. I heard the 613. I accept to keep whatever I learn that I don't know now. And that's how the Shari Tshuva says a person can do more than he knows. Maisav merubim kosher maisav merubim chachmasa. His deeds are more than his wisdom. So the Shari Tshuva says, how can you do more than you know? So this way, you accept to do whatever you learn. And it's as if you did it already. The acceptance itself is important. So therefore, or there's another possibility of who we're talking about. So we're not talking about people who just don't keep mitzvahs, because that you can protest openly. You don't need this, what's it called, universal public protest before they come into Eretz Yisrael. That only applies to things that can be done secretly or things that you can't protest. What's the second possibility? So I don't know what's in somebody's heart. He looks like a frum Jew. I don't know that he doesn't accept. There's a lot of people who don't do things and do things wrong. But I don't know if he's doing it wrong because he doesn't believe in it or because he's just weak. So here we're cursing the person when his heart doesn't believe. There's another possibility, and that the, what's it called, the, who says this? Don't remember. Somebody who puts up a mask, pretends to be a frum Jew, to give the impression that he's frum, so people will relate to him as a religious person, when in his heart he doesn't believe in anything. He's doing it, the people will do business with him or whatever and respect him, and he's just a faker. Nobody can know that. So originally they went into Eretz Israel, they gave a protest against that as a nation. We protest this kind of behavior. Now, there's another explanation of that last curse that fits in beautifully with what we said. Or asher lo yakim means the following. Yakim means to support the Torah. Some say it means monetary support. But many say what it means is the following. If I can see to it that my family will keep the Torah, if I speak up and I educate them and I protest against what they're doing, and I don't, and I'm held responsible for my family. If I have no more influence than that, then I'm responsible only for my family. If I'm more influential, and I can see to it that my whole neighborhood, if I would speak up, my neighborhood respects me, and they'll listen to me. And if I don't speak up, they'll do things that are wrong, and I could have stopped it. Then I'm responsible for my whole neighborhood. If I'm so influential that my whole city will listen to me, and I don't use my influence, then I'm responsible for the whole city. If I'm so influential that the whole country will listen to me, then I am responsible for the country, for the world. It depends how much power you have, of how responsible you are. And that's what it says. Or asher lo yakim, as divrei haTorah zos, cursed is the person who has the ability and the power to influence others and doesn't use it in a positive way. He's not makarif people, or he doesn't protest the things that they're doing. And in that way, he lets happen what he could have avoided. He could have stopped because he's influential. Then as much of influence that he had, that's how much he's held responsible. That's Or Asher Lo Yakim. It says that Yoshio HaMelech, the king, found the Sefer Torah that they had hidden away, rolled to this pasuk, and he said, I'm the one who has the total influence. I'm the king. I can make an influence over the entire Jewish people, so I'm responsible for the entire Jewish people. And he made a tshuva movement because of that. He sent out soldiers and officers to eradicate the idolatry that the Jewish people were doing and to teach them Torah. So whoever has that power of influence, he's responsible for as much as his influence will go. So it fits beautifully. That was the final finale of these curses and blessings, the purpose being to protest those things that are impossible to protest on an ongoing basis. But we made one universal protest when we came into Eretz Yisrael, and that is bolstered by learning it and reading it. Every time somebody learns that parasha, or we read it in the shul, right? The finale of it is to give a general blessing and curse to people who can have influence to stop sins, to increase mitzvahs, and if they use their influence, they get a blessing. They don't use their influence, they get a curse. Now, how bad are sins that are done, even that I didn't do, but somebody else did? How does it affect me? So just to give you an example, there's a Sfarno in this week's Sedra that is phenomenal. The Torah says like this, that every year you have Trumas and Maisras that you have to disperse, distribute to the poor, to the Levi, right? You have to take some of it up and eat in Yerushalayim, Maisra Sheni. Every year you have to take care of the Trumas and Maisras of that year, but you don't have to distribute it. You have 3 years to distribute it. You can put it in your silo, right, and save it up, and at the end of 3 years, by the end of the 3 years, you have to distribute it all. In the fourth year, on Erev Pesach, you go to the Beis HaMikdash after you've distributed all your Maaser for the first 3 years. There's 3 year cycles of Maaser. So after the cycle is over, you go to the Beis HaMikdash in the beginning of the fourth year, of Erev Pesach of the fourth year, and you make the following declaration. Biarti HaKodesh Min HaBayis. I have removed all the holy objects, all the holy things, Truma, Maaser, whatever, from my house. V'gam nesativ la-levi, la-ger, la-yosem, I gave it to all the people who are supposed to get it. The Maaser Rishon goes to the Levi, and the Maaser Sheni I brought to Yerushalayim and ate it there the proper way, and the Maaser Ani I gave to the poor people. I did what I was supposed to do. Lo avarti mimitzvosecha v'lo shochachti. I didn't transgress anything, and I didn't forget. That's more or less this declaration. Now the rabbis refer to this declaration as vidui maaser, the confession regarding maaser. Now if you ask me, that doesn't sound like a confession. I did everything you said, I didn't forget, and I didn't, what's it called, I didn't transgress anything. Some confession. Imagine coming Yom Kippur and saying, okay God, time now for confession. I confess, I didn't do anything wrong this year. I didn't forget anything. I did everything perfectly. I confess, I'm a tzaddik. That's some confession. Right? That's not confession. That is a declaration, but it's not confession. So why did the rabbis call this vidui maaser? So there are many answers, which are not for now, but the Sfarno says the following. Because my ancestors sinned by the golden calf, only Shevet Levi was fit to be the Kohanim. And all the rest of the Jewish people, right, were disqualified. Really, I could have been a Kohen, even though I'm not, had it not been for the sin of the golden calf. So I'm confessing that I had, and if I was a Kohen, I would be able to eat the Truman Maaser myself. I wouldn't have to give it to a Levi. I wouldn't have to get it out of the house. But I confess, because of the sin of my ancestors, that I had to get these things out of my house because there was a sin of the golden calf. Now what in the world confession does that have to do? I didn't sin the golden calf, it happened a few thousand years ago. I wasn't there. Right? Why do I have to confess? Now the answer is, confession is not just for sins that you did, but for the results of the sin. The word chet doesn't necessarily mean a sin, it means something's missing. imperfection. I'm confessing my imperfection. I didn't cause it. Somebody else caused it years ago, but it affects me. And I confess that because of the sin of my ancestors, I'm not what I could be. I could have been a Kohen, and I'm not. And I have to give it to somebody else. I can't eat these holy things. I confess my imperfection. That's the idea. So we see, and not only that, we say, and really, God, because of this, you really should punish us. But since we're giving tzedakah, and we recognize that we are one, and we are responsible to others, so look down from heaven and bless us. Meaning, why am I confessing over here? Because I'm the recipient of imperfection that came because we're all in this together, all generations. What happened in the past, what's happening in the future, what happens in the present, what happens to any Jew affects me, affects us all. And my imperfection is because the Jewish people did something that made that imperfection, and even though they did it thousands of years ago, it affects me today. And even though I didn't do it, but other people do affect me. So, therefore, as a people, because we created this imperfection, imperfection leads to negative results. That's called punishment. Okay? But since I recognize my responsibility to others, I recognize that it affected me because we're all in this together, we're all interrelated. And because of that, I give to others. It says, Kol hashkofa shebemikra l'roa, whenever it says, look down, it's for the bad. Except over here, where you're giving tzedakah, you're giving other people, and you recognize that you have a responsibility to others, and you're fulfilling it in a positive way, it counteracts and counterbalances the negative that you get because of other people. If you do good for other people, then the results of the negative that comes from other people will be balanced out and minimized. So therefore, that is the concept of these brachas and klos, at least from one perspective. And that's why it's very important for ourselves to realize that you can't just live, you know, for yourself. You're responsible for others. Others are responsible for you. What you do affects other people. What other people do affects you. So we have to live in a way that reflects that. That we're not just here on our own and only worry about ourselves. You have to worry about other people, both by not sinning because how it affects other people, and by doing mitzvahs because it affects other people good. By getting involved in with other people, both in a positive way of trying to influence them positively, and from stopping from them to doing things wrong, because we don't live in a world of live and let live, because we're all in this together. It's like the guy in the boat, right, that's making a hole in his little part of the boat, and he says, well, you know, it's my part of the boat, I can do what I want. No, we're all going to sink if you make a hole in the boat. So we're all in this boat together. And therefore, during Elul, it's very important to not only worry about how preparing ourselves for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, but preparing ourselves in light of everybody else. And it says that, Torah says, one of the hints to Elul, Uzumol Hashem Elokecha es levavcha ves levav zarecha. God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your children. The words es levavcha is Aleph Lamed, the first letters. The S Levav is Vav Lamed is El. There's an opinion of the Urayim and the Charedim, two Svarim of Rishonim, who say that a person who accepts Musar, who listens when people protest against his actions and desists, fulfills the mitzvah of Umaltem es Orlas Levavchem. You fulfill the mitzvah of circumcising the Orla of your heart by accepting Musar. And therefore, Elul is part of the time when we look for God to help us take away that Orla Salev, the covering over our heart, in order to be receptive to Musar from other people, Musar of ourselves, to hear that protest that was given thousands of years ago, right, in when we first entered Eretz Yisrael, and to strengthen ourselves, and to realize that we have a responsibility to strengthen others also. That's part of the Avodah of Elul before Rosh Hashanah comes. And Rosh Hashanah, we're going to be judged not only as individuals, we're going to be judged as part of the community of Klal Yisrael, not only present, but past, present, and future, because we're all connected. The souls of the Jewish people are eternal, and we're connected past, present, and future, right? We're also going to be judged as a klal, as a tzibur, as a community, as an eternal community, and therefore we have to fit into that community as well as we can. Okay. Now, what's your question?
My question was about when you're talking about the protesting.
Yeah.
And you kind of touched on it very briefly.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah.
So what do you do when you know that the protest is going to have negative ramifications?
So therefore, the purpose of the protest is to strengthen Yiddishkeit. If the result of the protest is going to be to weaken Yiddishkeit and to make a Chilul Hashem, then it's better not to protest, or to find a proper venue to protest.
I mean, I was like, when I was in Chutz Aretz, I heard a lot of the protesting that was going on here, and people who were from, but maybe not so from, and just from all spectrums, everyone
right.
was.
So if the protest sounds like it's what's it called, a riot, and people have lost control, right? And it's extreme. Then you're not bringing honor to Torah, you're bringing the opposite. So what should you do, right? It should be protests that are controlled in a way that people show how much it hurts them of what's going on, right? How much they, right? And it should be public or whatever, but not with burning garbage cans or breaking, what's it called, vice, which is mostly done by kids. Right, but if the people who are involved are responsible to see that if they can't control that, then they should find a way that they can control to make the protest, and not a way that's uncontrollable.
Right. So really,
which is what they're trying to do now.
Okay.
All these protests to keep it in the neighborhood, not to let children be involved at all, and just to let the world know that it hurts us. Can't be indifferent. So if it had been done like that to begin with, it would be fine. Right. Maybe they didn't know it was going to, right? It's a different world than it used to be. And today people take advantage, to get the action of the protest, and they really couldn't care less about Shabbos, unfortunately. Yeah?
You kept using the word protest. How do you define protest?
Protest means I publicly oppose what is going on. I can't accept that this is acceptable.
Mean just a sign, it could mean a verbalization,
right? Whatever is will be effective to one, perhaps stop the sin,
mm-hmm.
two, even if it can stop the sin, to show that I'm not indifferent and it's not going to have an effect on me and all the other things that we mentioned. Put them all together and find it'll give honor and respect to Torah. Torah is important enough to speak up for.
Mm-hmm.
Take all those things and then decide what is the most effective way that will accomplish all these ends, right, in the best way. And that necessarily is everything, the same protest. Yeah.
If we see in the public domain more interaction, between young teenagers dating and behavior that's not really proper in Holy Jerusalem, even though they may not have been raised in moral values, do you have to say something? Do you have an obligation?
Right. It could be that you don't have anything to say to them because it's not going to help. Right? Them specifically.
Right.
But if you see it, you should scream to yourself.
Yeah,
with whisper in a scream, I don't accept this. This is wrong.
Yeah.
Right? So it shouldn't affect you. And maybe you should find ways of protesting what you witnessed in ways of putting it into the newspaper or whatever, that this is something that people should be aware of, that they shouldn't think that it's okay because nobody says anything about it. So all the reasons we said why protest is important, right, the things that you can accomplish by protesting, do. The things that aren't going to be accomplished anyway because of the situation, there's no purpose to do them.
Thank you.
If I walk past Shabbos and neighbor who is watching the garden,
right.
And she even says Shabbat Shalom with a smile. So I should just in my heart, I'll say Shabbat Shalom.
Right. It could be if you know that person has no idea. They don't accept the value system that you accept. They don't believe in the Torah. They don't think that you're Orthodox, you're Charedi, right? You're Dati. You are not allowed to do that. I'm not Dati, so it's okay for me. Right? That's the mentality. Right? So selling them, you're watering your garden on Shabbos. It's also, right? If you would do that with two witnesses warning you, you get skila. Right? The person's going to look at you like you're out of your mind. It's not going to help anything. So if it would help, and as a person really believes in this, but they don't know that it's also to the garden, or they know, but they love their garden so much, then telling them nicely, right, you know, watering your garden on Shabbos is really not allowed. And maybe you should do it on Friday or do it on Sunday, right? Because it's such a shame that you have such a beautiful garden and you really take care of it and you're such a nice person in that respect, and you're doing it in such a way that it's causing destruction. You're causing to have a beautiful garden and you're destroying your neshama. Now, if the person could hear that, then that's the way to protest it and to give them tochacha. If they can't hear that, then there's no purpose of saying it. But you can't walk by and be indifferent to somebody being Mechal Shabbos. So you have to scream to yourself, Shabbos! But not to them, because to them it's going to have an opposite effect.
Wish them Shabbat.
Right. Right. Exactly. Because at least they recognize the Shabbos. Someday maybe they'll realize they can't do it. But if you don't even recognize the fact that it's a Shabbos, there's no hope, Bechlal, ever.
Yeah.
So there's something even saying good Shabbos to them.
Yeah.